So we're reading beginning of the 30th chapter, verse 1, titled The Activities of the Prachetas from the canto number 4. Vidura uvacha Tvaya bihita ye tvaya bihita brahman Sutta prachina barhishaha te rudra gitena harim siddham apu pratoshyakam sri vidura uvacha ye tvaya bihita brahman sutta prachini barhishaha te rudra gitena harim siddham apu pratoshyasakam Vidura uvacha Tvaya bihita brahman Sutta prachina barhisaha Te rudra gitena harim Siddhim apu pratoshyakam Siddhim apu atoshyatam Vidura uvacha Yetvaya brahman Sutta prachina bahishaha
See you.
Vidura uvacha. Vidura said, yea, those who, tvaya, by you, abhihitaha, were spoken about, Brahman, O Brahmana, Suta, sons, Prachinabarhisha, of King Prachinabarhi, Te, all of them, Rudra-gitena, by the song composed by Lord Shiva, Harim, the Lord, Siddhim, success, Apu, achieved, Pratosya, having satisfied, come, what? Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Vidura inquired from Maitreya, O Brahmana, you formerly spoke about the sons of Prachinabarhi and informed me that they satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting a song composed by Lord Shiva. What did they achieve in this way? So Vidura is asking Maitreya about his former narration of the life of Prachinabarhishat and their sons, and they composed a song glorifying Lord Shiva. What was the result of that? Purport. In the beginning, Maitreya Rishi narrated the activities of the sons of Prachinabarhi. These sons went beside a great lake, which was like an ocean, and fortunately, finding Lord Shiva, they learned how to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting the songs composed by Lord Shiva. Now, their father's attachment for fruitive activities was disapproved by Narada, and therefore kindly instructed Prachinabarhi by telling him the allegorical story of Paranjana. Now Vidura again wanted to hear about Prachinabarhi's sons, and he was especially inquisitive to know what they had achieved by satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here the words Siddhim, Apu, or achieved perfections are very important. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7.3, Manushyanam sahasresu kaschit yatata siddhaye. Out of many, many millions of persons, one may be interested in learning how to attain the success in spiritual matters. The supreme sex success is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 8.15. Mam mupetya puna janmam dukalayam ashasvatam naptuvanti mahatmanaha samsidim paramam gataha. Krishna speaks, after attaining me, the great souls, who are yogis in devotion, never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. And what is that highest perfection? This is also explained in that verse. The highest perfection is to return home, back to Godhead, so that one will never have to return to this material world and transmigrate from one body to another in the dream of material existence. By the grace of Lord Shiva, the Prachetas actually attained perfection and returned home back to Godhead after enjoying material facilities to the highest extent. Maitreya will now narrate that to Vidura. End of purport. Om Agyan Timirandasya Kena Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadanti Swam Padanti Kam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Siya Dvaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaudabhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, beginning a new chapter, hearing about a question from Vidura to Maitreya. He wants to know what the Prachetas, what their sons, they had met Shiva, and Shiva taught them a song to glorify the Lord. Now, what did they achieve by chanting that song sung by Lord Shiva? And that song is mentioned in the 24th chapter. In fact, the whole 24th chapter is the song sung by Lord Shiva, which is one of the longest chapters in the Bhagavatam, almost 80 verses. So what was the goal? Again, we hear, as we were speaking in the last week, this weekend, what is the goal? How important it is to understand the goal of the activities we perform. And the goal here is, of course, there's an intermediate goal and then there's an ultimate goal. When we do something, we perform an activity and something happens. But then what is the result of that happening? The intermediate goal is the result, and how that is offered to the object that you're serving is the ultimate goal. So there's both intermediate and ultimate goal. Here, he wants to know what is the ultimate goal. The intermediate goal is that they glorify the Lord in the best possible way. Why is that? Because this song is authorized by one of the greatest of all personalities in existence, Lord Shiva himself. Lord Shiva's position is very exalted. He's practically on the same level as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he manifests his various activities in this material world, he's sometimes called the father of all living entities, or sometimes even the second super soul. He has such powerful position, and there are many persons who worship Shiva as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In various Puranas, it teaches that also. So Shiva's position is very exalted. And so he composed this song, which is a perfect expression of the glories of the Lord by illustrating the Lord's qualities. To compose a prayer may be more than just saying some nice words of devotion. It should include also the actual characteristics and nature and achievements of the person you're glorifying as part of that prayer to show the glories of the personality you're glorifying like that. So in this prayer sung by Lord Shiva, in the 24th verse of this canto, it's the most amazing prayer. I think when I was here last time, we were on that chapter, and it's so full of devotion and amazing understanding of the nature of God, revealing more and more of his qualities and characteristics. So he taught that same prayer to the Prachetas. Now, what did they achieve? Well, we will learn about that as the verses continue here. But in Shiva's position is quite interesting. People don't understand Shiva. In fact, he's probably one of the most difficult personalities to understand outside of Krishna. Shiva is called why is he called the father of all living entities? Why isn't Krishna given that exclusive position? Because when Krishna creates, not Krishna, but actually Mahavishnu creates the material world, he does something that includes Shiva in that creation. And that is, and this is mentioned in the Brahma Samhita, when the Lord wants to begin the creation or to resume the creation from the previous manifestation of creation, Maya is in the form of an aggregate. And that is that all the energy and all the facilities of the material world are in a dormant state. That's called pradan. Pradan is the aggregate of everything material, but it's all in one lump. There's no distinction, there's no separation. So in order to get that material energy activated again, and to give the living entities a facility to go back into the material energy where they left off in the previous kalpa, the Lord glances towards the material energy, and that glance is Lord Shiva. And that glance is carried by Mahavishnu's consort, Ramadevi. She carries that glance, which includes the potency of Shiva, the time factor, the living entities, and the living entity's previous destiny, not karma, but destiny. And all that's carried in that glance, and it's like an impregnation of the material energy by using his eternal Shakti, Ramadevi, because the Lord never touches the material energy. Even in the point of creation, he does it through Shiva, he does it with the help of Lakshmi, who is known as Ramadevi in that particular manifestation. She carries that glance to the pradan. Pradan activates and becomes, then pradan becomes Maya. And then all that activation, it's actually the actual way we understand creation in this world. The man and the woman come together. The man injects the semen into the woman. The woman has the potential body within her womb. And when that soul that it takes, the soul is in the semen, it goes into the mother, into the chamber, then life starts to develop. And so in the same way, this is actually done on the higher level. And Shiva is that energy of injection, and Ramadevi is the receptacle that she carries to Maya, who is, we understand, Maya is an expansion of Ramadevi or Lakshmi. And then that chamber where the living entities are injected into is like the womb of Maya. And then all that becomes activated, and then they start to separate, and then that becomes, so it's no longer pradan. Pradan means the aggregate. It's now known as Nimityamaya, or the place where the living entities start to again connect with the material energy, and it's included with the time factor in their previous destination. Really very scientific understanding of how creation works. And then when all that happens, then Mahavishnu expands into Garbhodakva, Sai Vishnu. And then Lord Brahma, he appears, and he's the engineer. He has to work with all that energy and formulate it and create all the different bodies for the living entities. So he has already been enlightened by the Lord, and he takes that energy combined with the material energy and the spiritual energy together, and he again creates the material bodies like that. Jai Shisi Pancha Tattva Ki Jai. So this is Shiva. Well, I just wanted to give you a little understanding of what is the position of Lord Shiva. He's not a very... We know him as a demigod, something in charge of material destruction. We also know him as, what else? Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He's considered to be the greatest of all Vaishnavas. Therefore, he knows the principles of religious, he knows religious principles and he can teach religious principles. He's also called Mahadev. And he is also one of the 12 Mahajans. He teaches the science of bhakti. So, therefore, the pratetas are getting, some of the highest teachings about the glories of the Lord from Lord Shiva himself, not an ordinary personality. In fact, He is even greater than Lord Brahma. Shiva is greater than Brahma. Brahma is considered to be the highest engineer within the material world. And his planet is the highest place, Satyaloka or Brahmaloka. But higher than that is Shivaloka, which is outside of the universal structure, which is in between the spiritual world and the material world. That's called Kailash, or Shivaloka, like that. So it says that Brahma, he's a jiva, so he has 78% of the qualities of the Lord. Just like the living entities like us, we also have 78%. But Lord Shiva has 84% of the qualities of the Lord. And Narayan, who is the manifestation of the expansion of the Vaikuntha personality of Godhead, has 96% of the qualities of Krishna. So how exalted is Lord Shiva? So therefore, that's why we find so many people today, they worship Shiva as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes we speak amongst devotees and we find that many devotees, before they came to Krishna consciousness, they had some connection with Lord Shiva. Yeah, anybody? Yeah. Many, right? Yeah. In fact, you know, I used to have a button, you know, one of these buttons, you know, you kind of pin it on it, and it was a picture of Lord Shiva. And I used to wear it on my big bag for the first 5 years when I was a devotee. Because I was somewhat of a Shiva bhakta. At least in the most, not exactly following the principles of Shiva worship, but Shiva was very attractive because he also, because he's the father of all living entities, he helps bring the conditioned souls to Krishna. So to please Shiva is not to worship Shiva, but to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, because Shiva is actually also worshiping Krishna. Of course, sometimes we hear that he's more inclined to worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Ram. There's that one prayer. Brahmo bole chaturmukhe Krishna Krishna hare hare Mahadeva panchamukhe Rama Rama hare hare. I'm not so good at singing. But the point is that Lord Shiva actually, you know, he worships the Supreme Personality of God, Lord Sri Ram. But he's also glorifying Lord Sri Krishna also. So he's a very exalted personality. So he composed these beautiful prayers. Now the Pachetas are going to sing these prayers, and they've glorified the Lord. What did they get out of him? And Prabhupada makes the point in this purport that this material world is like a dreamlike state. And these prayers are like a way to elevate our consciousness away from the material world, to perform a service that pleases the Lord, and therefore attain the goal of life. Taktva deham purnan janma naitimam eti surjuna. Here Prabhupada quotes the verse from the eighth chapter, verse number 15. And he says that when you go back to the spiritual world, which is actually the goal of human life, then you don't come back here anymore. And it's interesting, Prabhupada uses the word dreamlike material existence. Why is this material world called a dream? It's an illusion, but why? Why is it illusion? It's temporary, yeah, because it's always changing. It's constantly changing. So where's the reality? Before the change, during the state of existence, or after when it changes again? Which one's real? You go to sleep at night, and you dream, and you forget about this existence. You're in a dream state, and you're watching something. But you have an understanding once you wake up that I was just dreaming. And so you don't put much what we say importance in the dream, right? And then you go on with your day-to-day life and you consider that the reality. But when you're in and you're sleeping, there's no awareness of this existence. You're laying on the bed and you're in a different state of consciousness. And you have no recollection of your identity or your even purpose of life because you're in a completely different state of consciousness. So when we wake up, we say this is reality. But when you're sleeping, this is a dream. And when you're waking, that other part is a dream. So Prabhupada would also say the difference between the waking reality and the dreaming reality is the difference of time only. That's the only difference. This is also a dream. Because we're dreaming we're a man, we're dreaming we're a woman, we're dreaming we're in Slovenia, we're dreaming we're dreaming all these things, that these things seem to be real. Just like when you look into a dream, sometimes you see yourself in the dream. Isn't that amazing? Have you ever had a dream and you watch yourself in the dream? So who's watching and who is the one that's being watched? Which one is the real one? Right? Are they both fake? Or which one is real? So, you know, so we look into the mirror and we think that's me, but who's looking at what? Who's actually looking? Can the eyes actually see anything? No, the eyes can't see anything. They're mediums for you to relate to their or to see the outside world. But you're the one that's seeing. So your body is not you. It's just a covering which has instruments for the soul to relate to this dreamlike material existence. So therefore, to give up this dreamlike material existence is the success of life and come back to the reality. Something that is temporary is characterized as being unreal because it's always changing. When something is changing, where is the reality? At what part of its appearance? Where can you say truth? Prabhupada told that famous story, Truth and Beauty. It was one of the first Back to Godhead magazines back in the 1940s. Prabhupada read in this article that that truth is actually beautiful. And Prabhupada agreed, but he said, but what is real, what is truth? And what is beauty? So then he wrote this article, which is a story, a little analogy. Should I tell the story? Are you sure? A lot of people don't like this story. Anyway, I'll tell it. Where one prince, wealthy, charismatic, very handsome prince was touring the kingdom. He saw this cottage he had, what he didn't recognize, so he decided to find out who was living there. So he knocked on the door and this beautiful young girl opens the door. And immediately he's overwhelmed by her charm and her beauty. He becomes mesmerized. And all he can do is propose marriage to her. And because he's a prince and because he has that position, he's using that influence. And so she's not, you know, she's kind of taken aback by his advances. But she realizes that he's a powerful person. She doesn't know how to refuse him. So she decides to play a little program. She said, all right, I will accept you, but you come back after 1 week. So now she's somewhat religious also. So she decides to give him a little bit of a message. So she starts taking purgatives and laxatives, and she starts passing stool and urine and vomit, and she collects it in these buckets, and she stores it in the back part of her house. I'm sure not too many people do that, but anyway. Anyway, she does this for the whole week. And now what happens? Her body becomes very emaciated. Her eyes are like dark and sunken. Her skin is starting to, wrinkle up. And she's really sickly looking. And so after a week, he comes back, knocks on the door, she opens the door, and he says, "My dear old lady, where's that young girl who's living here? I'm supposed to come and marry her." She said, "That's me." He said, "Quit joking with me, old lady. Where is she hiding?" She said, "Don't you recognize me?" And then finally he got the message. It was her. He said, "What happened?" She said, "Well, you were so interested in my beauty, I kept it for you. Please come back here and get it." So she takes him in the back room and she shows him all these nice buckets. End of story. So, truth and beauty. Prabhupada's point was, real truth is beautiful, but what goes on as truth in this material world can't be called beautiful because it's temporary. It's always changing, right? This is the way, this is the nature of anything material. And so things are always changing. So time, the time factor is the thing that is the most powerful force in the material world. Time is considered to be immovable. What's the word? Invincible. Inconceivable. Time is moving. We're not even aware of it. It just moves. And as time goes on, we think, "Oh, I was so young many years ago. Now look at my age." And time just moves things along. How fast? And another one, time is imperceptible. We don't even perceive the force of time, but it's always changing things. In fact, it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada explains that everything material goes through six stages. It's born, grows, produces some byproducts, stays for some time, dwindles and then vanishes. The six changes of everything material. So you can't hold on to something that's always moving, always changing, right? The nature's, the only constant thing in this world is change. Right? The only constant thing in this world is change. But a devotee engaged in devotional service becomes fixed on something that doesn't change. Because we don't change. And the object of our goal in life is unchangeable also, which is devotion to Krishna. Devotional service is eternal, and Krishna is eternal, and we are eternal. But everything around us is changing constantly, moving from one situation to another, right? Sometimes you're sick and you think, "Oh, I'm so miserable." But after a while, you'll be healthy again. It's just a matter of time. And now you're healthy and after a while, you'll get sick. And now you're living and you're young and pretty soon you'll be old. And then after a while, you'll die. At least your body will. So this is the way the world is. You can't stop change. Change is always going. Always happening, always happening, always happening. So devotee remains fixed in the midst of this change by focusing on something that doesn't change. Because if you focus on something that constantly changes, where's the stability in life? There's no stability. You're trying to enjoy within the changes. You're changing, that's changing. And the whole perception of what you're coming in contact is also changing, right? You get married and you're in love, and after a couple of years, you're in this divorce court, right? Change, you know. It's change, change, change. Our perceptions change. Everything is changing, changing, changing. So that's not our nature. Our nature is, well, you know, Prabhupada says, you want happiness, but you want happiness always. He says, that's your nature. The soul is always happy. The soul is always full of knowledge. We are always striving for that. And people in this world are also striving for that too. But they're trying to find it in a place that keeps changing. Therefore, they keep chasing after different things in order to find something that has substance and has some fulfillment in it. You can't find it in this world. It's just the way this world is. It's always changing. Always changing. So therefore, a devotee wants to focus on something that is eternal, and that is devotional service to Krishna. And Prabhupada says, once one has attained perfection, goes back to the spiritual world. And it's interesting, sometimes we get that question. When you go to the spiritual world, do you come back here again? This verse mentions it. It says, Krishna says, after attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of members. So Prabhupada is basically saying, you fall from the spiritual world only once. Krishna is saying that. Now, does that mean you lose your independence and you can no longer fall? No. It means that because you have the experience of coming to this material world, you'll never come again. You just won't come back here. It's like somebody say, here's an outhouse. It's been used by at least 1,000 people within the last year. Please live in it. Would you think, wow, how can I live in an outhouse? It's terrible in here. Well, this is what the material world is like. It's like an outhouse. Prabhupada said, he said that. He said, the living entity comes to the material world to do two things, to pass stool and urine, that's all. That's it. That's just it. So that's pretty much it. And he says, when you just like, you know, the man is walking the dog, and he's just kind of walking, you know, and then the dog stops and passes stool and urine, the man waits. He gets his little shovel and puts it in the plastic bag because it's illegal to leave it on the sidewalk. And then he goes, he's waiting for the dog to do his business. So Krishna's just watching us. All right, he's passing stool and urine. All right, come on, Mr. Doggy. Come on, come back to me. When are you going to get tired of passing stool and urine? So this is this material world, huh? So we're just trying to let you understand that don't try for any happiness here because it's not worth it. It's simply not worth it. You'll just get disappointed. So, but here, that element of independence still remains. You can come back again. When Prabhupada was asked by Krishna to come to this material world, Bhuta Bhavana Prabhu mentioned it yesterday in his lecture. I remember the narration because I heard it from one devotee who heard it from Prabhupada himself. And he was massaging Prabhupada when Prabhupada spoke. And Prabhupada spoke, and Prabhupada said, Krishna asked me to come to this material world. And I said, material world? Horrible place. Horrible. And Krishna says, no, you go, you write some books, and I'll protect you. And then Prabhupada agreed because Krishna was persistent. Because he saw that this eternal associate of mine is competent to do this work to bring Krishna consciousness to the whole world. So yeah, so Prabhupada actually referred to that incident. He spoke it in a very trance-like form of meditation when he spoke it, remembering how Krishna asked him to come. Prabhupada was amazing. Prabhupada could remember when he was 6 months old. Can you remember when you were 6 months old? Can you remember when you were 5 years old? Prabhupada said, I remember sitting on my lap of my auntie and she was knitting and I was 6 months old at the time. Now that's a Mahapurush. That's a personality who's not of this world. He's a Mahapurush. So Prabhupada could even reflect on his relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. Because it says that one who is in pure transcendental consciousness is not subjected to the material laws. Their consciousness is above the material law. Although he came and acted like one of us in many ways, still He was just doing that to perform his service, but he was from the spiritual world. Completely. And so it says that, yeah, when we get that opportunity, again, to return to the spiritual world, you never want to come back here again. Because you realize it's just suffering, that's all. And so, therefore, and Krishna says that is the highest perfection, to return back home, back to Godhead. And Prabhupada writes in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, very few persons want to go back to Godhead. But he says if one wants to go back to Godhead, then Krishna recognizes that person. Because Prabhupada adds, he says, very few people are really interested in Krishna. And Krishna finds someone who's interested in me. Krishna takes notice of that person and helps that person come back to him like that. So most people perform spiritual life in order to better their material existence or to find happiness in this world and to also be a little holy at the same time, a little spiritual. But that's not the goal. That's what you see in the world today. The major religions of the world simply teach good works, worldliness, worship God, develop your relationship with God, and you'll be happy in this world. We don't tell you that. We don't tell you that. And the Prabhupada says, no, the idea is to go, to get out of this place and not try to make a better arrangement here. That's all. So this is the goal here. So we'll hear later on as these verses go on what the purchetas actually benefited by glorifying the Lord through the prayers of Lord Shiva. Any questions or comments? Janaki Nath Prabhu?
Just a phrase you used earlier on, I just want a clarification. You said past destiny? Is it past destiny seemed oxymoron?
No, you see from the previous kalpa, when the kalpa is, when the annihilation is, the living entities go back into the Mahavishnu and stay, wait there for the next manifestation. So they carry their destiny with them. You can use the word karma, but it's not used in that sense. It's more or less destiny. So they carry that with them, along with, that's also carried by Lord Shiva, along with, you know, the time factor. The living entities, their destiny, and the time factor are all transported by the glance of the Lord, which is Shiva. That's the word that's used, their destiny. No, she's actually Lakshmi. But in that particular manifestation of Mahavishnu, she's known as Ramadevi. That's her. She's Lakshmi, actually.
So then Lord Vishnu impregnates her, or is it Lord Shiva?
Lord Vishnu impregnates her, and that impregnation is the glance of Shiva. She carries that glance. It's a little hard to understand how you can understand this, but it's in other words, Krishna doesn't touch the material energy. She takes the glance of Lord Shiva and carries that glance to Pradhan or Maya like that. So he comes in contact with Lakshmi. That's all it says, that he comes in contact with Lakshmi. She carries that glance, which is the glance of Mahavishnu, in the form of Shiva, the time factor, the living entity, and her destiny. That's the... Well, that's one of his functions. Well, the Shiva we're talking about here is Sadashiva. A Sadashiva is the original Shiva who is an eternal person. There is a Shiva in every universe also, who's an expansion of the original Shiva. Shiva's a post, like Brahma's a post. There's an original Brahma, there's an original Shiva, like that. And all the other Brahmas and Shivas are actually expansions. That's also mentioned in Brahma Samhita. Mm-hmm. It's like, how does Shiva come to this material world? He comes through the anger of Lord Brahma, like that. That's how he appears. But that's not the original Brahma, Shiva. That's an expansion of that original Shiva. Yes, Leela Shakti? He came from Krishna alone. He's an eternal associate of Krishna in the spiritual world. Yeah. That's also possible. You know, the Lord can choose whoever he wants to choose. But he's also, I don't know, I can only give you a little philosophical speculation. I can't give you a Shastric answer on this. The philosophical speculation is that in this particular manifestation of, you know, spreading Krishna consciousness, we're spreading the glories of Goloka Vrindavan and not the glories of Vaikuntha. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha and Krishna. So he's also, you know, bringing his eternal associates. Usually, if you want to bring somebody with you, you usually take people you know from your own. You know, it's in Prabhupada's in Mahaprabhu's group like that. When Prabhupada said, when people asked him about his identity, he never really told anyone. But he said, my color, my transcendental color is reddish gold. Now who has a reddish gold color? Who knows? Nityananda, yeah. Nityananda is reddish gold. If you look and see the Panchatattva in Mayapur, there's three different color gold on the altar there. Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar are gold. Shivas and Advaita are whitish gold. And Nityananda is a reddish tint in that gold. He's reddish gold. So Prabhupada said, my eternal color is that. But he never really said who he was, because when he was asked by one devotee, she asked him, Mother Vishakha, Prabhupada, who are you in the spiritual world? Prabhupada said, that you do not require. In other words, none of your business. And then he was asked again by someone else, and he answered, if I told you, you would faint. That was the second time he was asked. That's how he answered that. And there's a whole book written by one of my senior godbrothers trying to understand by Shastra and by Prabhupada's statement who he actually was. I have that book. It's a really interesting book. I know the author. His name is Babru. Oh my friend, yeah, Babru. And, you know, he's trying to pin it down, but then he gives. You know, after you read that, you don't get any closer. You get a little information about how we could understand it, but the conclusion is still uncertain. But the thing is, as Prabhupada says, we don't really require that. When you go back to Godhead, you'll meet Prabhupada there. He'll come and welcome you. Thank you for serving in my ISKCON mission. Welcome back home. He's there waiting for you. Yes.
Prabhupada, that prayer he wrote in the Jaladutta, there's a glimpse of his glimpse, because he says that when will the day come when I will be able to like play with the cow poison?
Yeah, that's all mentioned in Bob Brew's book. He indicates something like cowherd boy. But then again, one of his godbrothers says because he likes kirtan, he's in Madhurya Ras. One of his senior godbrothers said that. So people say it's Madhurya, some say it's Sakya. After you read that particular book by Brahbhu, he gives indications of both. Anyway, Prabhupada also said, happiness is to look into Krishna's lunch pail and to see what Mother Yasoda cooked for him today. So there's another indication that's also mentioned there. But you know, you really don't know. You can just speculate. Better not to speculate. Just all you know is that he's come from the spiritual world to spread Krishna consciousness, and we should follow his instructions. We should make his instructions our only goal in life. Yes. Yeah, don't stick around. That's the point. You got about 5,000 years to get out of here. So after that, it's going to get pretty bad. Mahaprabhu's movement is for 5,000 years, it increases. So you'll see for the next 5,000 years, Krishna consciousness will expand all over the world. It'll only grow. But after 5,000 years, when it reaches its, a certain perfection, it'll start to go down. And then for the next 5,000 years, it'll gradually deteriorate until it's gone. Like that. 5,000 up, 5,000 down, 10,000 years. So Prabhupada would say, yeah, don't stick around. Go back to Godhead now, don't waste time. Yeah, because Kali Yuga will come in. If you read the different Puranas, Linga Purana, Vayu Purana, Shiva Purana, many Puranas, describes the characteristics of Kali Yuga in the later parts of this age. It's really horrible. You grew up watching dinosaur movies, right? How many of you grew up watching dinosaur movies? These are actual animals that existed in previous Kali Yugas. Yeah. These dinosaurs are not simply, they don't exist now because, Kali Yuga is not that bad. But if you want to really be in a dinosaur movie live as one of the participants, you can stick around. Dinosaurs, yeah, people have found the fossils of, it's previous Kali Yugas. Kali Yuga gets so bad that the whole atmosphere is practically unlivable. Prabhupada said the material world is like that. Sometimes it's always bad, but sometimes it's a little better in the being bad. But it gets really bad sometimes. I mean, you go to some places on this planet, people are really suffering. You're in Slovenia, It's a lot different. Things are somewhat, ordinary. But you go to some parts of the world and people don't even have food. They're dying of diseases. There's wars, pestilence. It's hell. People live in hell right now on this planet. This planet. It's not even a lower planet. So, yeah, Kali Yuga. Okay, now I can see you. Question? Yeah.
About the previous topic about Sri Prabhupada.
Ah.
Like he gave us a certain sadhana.
Certain?
Sadhana.
Sadhana, yeah.
Like Nikunja Yuno Ratikali Siddha.
Yeah.
Morai Allah. Would it be possible that Prabhupada is giving us this sadhana is not a Rupa Nuga, but is giving just some random political blocking.
And these prayers are by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Prabhupada included those prayers because they're the glorification of the pure devotee spiritual master. So what those there's not some eulogy or some poetry there. The eternal pure spiritual master is assisting Radha and Krishna in their transcendental pastimes in the spiritual world. Chaitanya Charitamrita says that the pure spiritual master comes from either one of two tattvas, the tattva of Nityananda or the tattva of Radharani. That's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse number 46 or 47. It's in the purport. Prabhupada writes, the spiritual master is coming from either the tattva of Nityananda, Balaram, or from the tattva of Srimati Radharani. Therefore, he's either an eternal associate of Krishna as a cowherd boy or eternal associate of Krishna in Madhurya Ras as a gopi. So, yeah, that verse, Nikunjayuno Rad, that was discussed by a lot of my god brothers. How is it possible to attain that level, right? That's really intimate. And it says that, you know, because we also are asked to take on the responsibility of becoming a spiritual master. Does that mean that we are also Nikunjayuno Ratike Lisidbe? Does that mean also we have that connection? Possible, but not always. So that's a glorification of the eternal pure spiritual master like that. And Prabhupada fits that description easily. Rupanuga, that's a small definition. He's a Maha Bhagavat, practically. He comes to this world only for a mission. He's not under the influence of karma. It may look like karma to us, but that's just the way Krishna does it. Just like when Krishna was here, Prabhupada said many persons saw Krishna simply as an ordinary human being. Or, not the ordinary, but just a human being who had a lot of power, that's all. Prabhupada said only between 100 and 200 people who were here at the time of Krishna actually knew he was God. Krishna, that was. So even though they saw Krishna and even interacted, they didn't realize he was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how much do we know about the spiritual master? It's the same thing, you know. So all we can do is bow our head in humble submission and thank him for his mercy and his compassion and ask how can we serve. That's all we can do. That's all we can do. How can I serve? Or, you know, you're in the presence of such a great personality. What can you do? All you can do is how can I serve you? And that Prabhupada said that is the best mood of a devotee. How can I serve? That's all. Yes, and Janaki Nath.
Raja, there are 12 Mahajans. What's the qualification of a Mahajan? Why is only 12? Would Prabhupada be in that category?
Mahajan is one who knows the religious principles. So there are 12 original Mahajans, and all great personalities follow one or more of these Mahajans. That's all. Swayambhu, Narada Sambhu, Kapila, Kumara Mano, Janaka, Bhishma, Prahlad, Balaki Vyasaki Bayam. Who's speaking this verse? The Lord of Death, Yamaraj, he's speaking this verse in the Bhagavad. So he names the 12 Mahajans. So we're in the category of Brahma Sampradaya. So he's also a Mahajan. He knows the teachings, he knows the religious principles like that. Shiva also has his Sampradaya like that. Kumaras, Prahlad. They all are competent to teach the science of bhakti. Mahajano yena kata sampanta. The truth of religious principles is hidden in the hearts of the great souls, the Mahajans.
So there's 12 sampradayas?
No, 4. But these Mahajans are, you know, not within those. They also have their followings like that. You don't want to follow Bhishma because his, you know, he's... Well, we take a lot of the teachings of Bhishma, but he's in a different mood. He teaches a different way to practice religious principles. Religious principles are diverse, and so some Mahajans teach certain religious principles and others teach others like that. Religious principles are changeable according to time, place, and circumstance. Some religious principles that are eternal, some religious principles are applied according to time, place, and circumstance like that. So, we have to follow Srila Prabhupada, who is following his spiritual master, who's coming in the line of disciplic succession from Lord Brahma. So we're, yeah.
That's Brahma,
why universe? Yeah, we're in the Brahma, Gaudiya, Madhva, Sampradaya. Gaudiya means Lord Chaitanya. It doesn't say. It doesn't really say. It just says Brahma. Now, after hearing about, I just heard recently, was hearing about that there's three different kinds of Brahmas. There's one, the Brahma, the original Brahma that Krishna spoke to, and the manifestation of Brahma in this world, in this universe. One Brahma is a pure devotee, another Brahma is not a pure devotee. Because Prabhupada speaks about that. In some places he says Brahma is a pure devotee, in other places he says he's not. So he's talking about two different Brahmas, that's all. In the third canto, 33rd chapter, I think it's verse number 8 or 9, it says that at the end of the universe, when the universe is destroyed and Brahma's abode is destroyed, Brahma goes to the spiritual world. But because he's not a pure devotee, he comes back again to this material world. It's in the purport in the third canto. So he's talking about that Brahma who's not a pure devotee. Why isn't he a pure devotee? Because he has the post. He wants to occupy a post and serve Krishna in a certain way. And you know, that's also mentioned in the Brahma Samhita. When Krishna gave concessions to Lord Brahma, because Brahma wanted to be the creator. He wanted to do this service on behalf of Krishna. So he had a particular desire to serve in a particular way. Therefore, he wasn't 100% pure. If you want to serve the Lord in a particular way, although you want to serve the Lord for the Lord's pleasure, that desire makes your devotion somewhat tinged by personal motivation. It's not even, no, it's higher than that. It's higher than that. I mean, we can't understand the exalted position of Lord Brahma, but still he wants to be Lord Brahma. But we hear that, you know, such personalities like, you know, Kolavetra Sridhar or, you know, Haridas Thakur, they just want to serve the Lord. They don't care where they are, you know. Uddhava wanted to serve the Lord, and when he met the gopis of Vrindavan, he was just overwhelmed by the gopis of Vrindavan. He said, I just want to become a blade of grass in Vrindavan so the gopis can step on me every time they carry their milk products in and out of Vrindavan. He said, if I get the gopis dust on my head as a blade of grass, that's perfection. You ask Lord Brahma to do that, I don't think he'd agree. Oh, actually, yeah, he did. He also agreed to do that, yeah. That's right. Yeah, after Krishna punished him, then he actually prayed for that same benediction, yeah. But it wasn't until Krishna punished him. So, yeah, so you can serve in a certain way and be fully absorbed in pleasing the Lord by that type of service. But if the Lord says, serve in this way, then that's higher. That's higher. So the unalloyed devotees, they just want to, you know, they want to serve the Lord in whatever way the Lord wants them to serve. That's the highest, for the pleasure of the Lord. The gopis, when Krishna had a headache, Narada said, Krishna, how are you? He said, oh, I'm not feeling so good. I got a headache. Narada said, what can I do to relieve your headache? He said, well, there's only one thing that can relieve my headache. You have to get the dust from the feet of my devotees. And when you put it on my head, and then my headache will be gone. So Narada went around. And he went to the sages of Danyakaranya forest. And they were so happy to see Narada. And then after talking to him, they asked, how's Krishna? He said, well, he's got a headache. Oh, they said, oh, really? What can we do? He said, well, actually, I've come here to ask for the dust of your feet to put on his head. They said, Narada, what are you saying? Put our foot dust on the Supreme Personality of Godhead's head? Do you know what will happen to us? We'll go to hell. No way, Narada, forget it. Now, you know, you can just fly on, you know. You stayed too long. So, you know, they went. I mean, Narada went to a different, and finally he came back to Krishna. He said, nobody's going to give their foot dust. Krishna said, just go ask the gopis. When they asked the gopis were immediately scraping the dust off their feet with their bangles and making it into piles. And Narada said, don't you know by putting your foot dust on Krishna's head, you go to hell? They said, we don't care. If it relieves Krishna's headache, even for one moment, we're happy to go to hell. Then Narada understood the exalted position of the gopis. Can't compare. Their devotion cannot be compared or even understood by anyone. So that's pure, that's the highest form of devotion, where one doesn't even care about their own destiny. It's only the pleasure of Krishna. And so, yeah. We may not be able to reach that stage, but we should know what is the highest stage.
I would like to ask you the same about the length of this movement.
So you
were talking about how this movement, this one, will be for 5,000 years?
It's prophesied in the Shastras that Lord Chaitanya's movement will be a intervention into this age of Kali for 10,000 years. So when Lord Chaitanya appeared a little over 500 years ago, he brought the golden age. So the time of his appearance begins the golden age. Now for the next 5,000 years, Krishna consciousness will continue to expand all over the world. It's not ISKCON. ISKCON just happens to be a branch of Lord Chaitanya's mission. Yeah. But ISKCON is leading that spreading of Krishna, of Lord Chaitanya's message, because Prabhupada is an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya.
I want to ask, it is said that if you go to the heavenly planets, which as I understand, according to Bhagavad Gita, it can oftentimes happen to an unsuccessful yogi. Then the time is different there. So some devotees were saying, like, it can actually happen that you miss out on the whole movement by having one unsuccessful.
Yeah, Haribol. Good idea. Yeah, stay away from heaven. If you go to the heavenly planets, if you perform devotional service in order to enjoy material happiness, Krishna says, all right. Well, you want a better material situation? It's here. It's in the material world. It's called Swargaloka. Yeah, it's available. Prabhupada made a scary statement. He said many of my disciples will achieve Swargaloka. They'll perform devotional service. At one point they'll give up and they'll just try to be, you know, practicing on a very low level of Krishna consciousness. The desire to enjoy material happiness is still there. What is material happiness? Friendship, society, love. Summarize it, put it together, family life. So there's a drop of happiness in family life. That's the only happiness in this material world. It's called a drop. So people are looking for happiness in family life. You know. And you get some drop. But you're in a desert and someone says, here's a drop of water, drink. Drink to your full satisfaction. You say, what are you doing? You're just giving me some more pain. I need a lot of water. I'm thirsty. No, here's a drop. Drink. In fact, you know, even save some for later. This is material happiness. This is by Vyapati. I'm not just making this up. This is Vyapati. Lord Chaitanya quotes Vyapati. Prabhupada, I don't remember the Sanskrit, but it's beautiful. You know, the material world is like a desert, and material happiness is like a drop in the desert. He says, just like when you're in a desert and you're thirsty, you start to hallucinate. And then the light of the sun reflects off the sand and creates what is called a mirage. So a mirage appears to be something real, but all it is an oasis that comes from your dreamlike state of delirium due to thirst and the reflection of the light of the sun off the sand. And you see, and you run after that, but when you get there, all you get is more sand. So that's material happiness. It looks good, and you just run after it, and you get something else, right? I mean, how many times do we have to get kicked by Maya to realize this? I mean, we've all been kicked by Maya, right? We've been kicked over again, but we think, you know, it'll get better.